conditioned responses and empower them to make their own choices. She's also the co-author of Marriage Magic, Find It, Keep It, and Make It Last, and a contributor to 101 Great Ways to Improve Your Life, Volume 2, writing a chapter about overcoming stress and the soon-to-be-published Power of Persistence. Karen is a featured writer on Yahoo Personals, a relationship blogger for ThirdAge.com, and writes for HitchedMagazine.com. Karen also conducts workshops and teleseminars. She's a frequent guest on national radio, and her expert opinion has appeared in numerous publications. Additionally, she was the former relationships expert on the Beau Griffin Morning Show and a marriage expert on ClubMom.com. Her websites, ChoiceRelationships.com and DrKarenSherman.com, offer free newsletters and programs. She and her husband have enjoyed over 30 years of marriage, and they have two daughters, a son-in-law, and a grandson. Karen, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, it's nice to be here, Jody. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm pleased to have you, and I'm looking forward to our topic about empty nesters. And to just kind of dive in, let's talk about what an empty nest is. Give us the definition, and then we can dive in and talk a little bit more about it.
Well, an empty nest is when all of your children have left the home. And, of course, today it's a little different than it was years ago because children are leaving later in their lives. But, again, it's when your last child has left home and it's just the two of you.
Okay. Now, some of our listeners might be wondering why we're discussing this topic when most of the parents who are listening probably still have children at home. Why is this a relevant topic for people who aren't empty nesters yet to be listening to our show today?
Well, because I think that any time there's going to be a change in one's life, it's always better if we plan for it, because any adjustment is stressful. And so if you don't plan for it and you don't anticipate what it's going to be like, I think that, you know, it's going to be more difficult. And there are absolutely things that you can do, knowing what might happen, and things that you can do to help you prepare for that time in your life.
Okay, good. And I know we're going to be getting into that a little bit later in the show, some prevention tips.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of who do you think, and maybe you can even tell us maybe what research says about empty nesters?
Well, I think, first of all, I think I want to tell you that as much as we love our children and as joyful as they are, the time that we're raising children is really the most stressful for a marriage. We can talk a little bit about that later if you want, but I just want to give an overview. And so marital satisfaction actually improves once the kids are out of the house. But on the other hand, what happens for many couples is, especially if they have been very children-centric, in other words, focused all of their energy around the children, once the kids leave, they sort of don't know what to do. And they're much more vulnerable because, again, if all their focus, all their energy, their roles have been very much around the children, then it's going to be more difficult for them to deal with that separation and change. It's going to be particularly difficult for single mothers because, again, they don't even have a relationship with a significant other, and so they're going to be much more involved with their children. And the last group that I would talk about would be those people who had fragile marriages and were staying together for the sake of the children.
Very good. So maybe we can go through. Tell us, go back through those, and then tell us what are some of the kind of the risks for each of those different categories of parents and some of the special challenges that they may face.
Well, okay, I think the main thing we want to talk about are the people who have focused mostly around the children, okay? If for women mostly, if you have really made your life's work, if you're a stay-at-home mom and you have made your life's work, which is very noble, but it's all about the kids, now who are you? How do you identify yourself? Your time as mom is over. And so you don't know what to do. You don't know how to function if you're not mom. So that's going to be particularly difficult for you. And the good news in the last you know, in more recent past than many, many years ago, is that dads are much more involved with their children, and that's very good. It's very, very important for child rearing and for the way that children develop. But again, once the kids are out of the house, dads also become more confused about exactly what their role is now that the kids are gone.
So it's not just the physical house that's empty. It's almost as though there's an aspect of our identity
of
our roles that it really, I suppose, isn't empty. You and I have talked that both of us are empty nesters, and that parenting really doesn't end when children are 18, but it really becomes very different once they're out of the home. And it's not that we're not parents anymore, but it is very different. And if we try to do the same things that we did when they were at home, it would just be inappropriate and not healthy for anyone involved.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, of course, the other thing that happens is that as your children are leaving, you also have to recognize that you're older and you're aging. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes really psychologically a real wake-up call. Because as they are now taking their place in the world and becoming adults, you have now shifted, and you're not the young generation anymore. You know, sometimes I make a joke and I say, the way that I know that I've gotten older is that when I go to, let's say, a wedding, I'm not necessarily the one who's dancing in the middle anymore. I've moved to that outer circle, and I'm the one that's clapping, watching the younger people dancing.
Yeah.
And I sort of foresee that in the not-too-distant future, I might be the people who sit away from the band with the napkins in my ear, you know?
Right.
but again, as our children move out, it's a real reminder that they have now come into the adult world, and where does that put us? So
right.
That's very scary also.
Yeah, yeah. So in terms of marriages, you said that sometimes that it actually can improve because there's just more time to focus on the marriage. And we'll talk a little bit about prevention in the next segment in terms of how to make sure that that is what's left when you get to those empty nest years, and that it's not that you've just kind of become distant and you no longer can relate to each other. Go back for a second to single parents.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit more about that. One of the first administrative assistants I had was a single mom, and she worked from home so that she could still be a mom at home and be there mm-hmm. When her daughter came home. And she, for reasons we won't talk about now, but anyway, she wasn't able to continue working for me. So she recontacted me again when her daughter was getting ready to head into her senior year, starting to look at college, moving away. And now she was looking for a reference for a job outside of the home. And one of the things she said was, you know, I really need to have that social involvement and be with other people during the day. And I really thought that that was very healthy, the way that she had kind of planned for this, and she was really looking at how to take care of her needs so she wouldn't just fill that space by being overly involved, maybe in an inappropriate way, with this daughter and promote healthy separation.
Yeah, I think that she did a great job of really being able to shift her priorities and her assessment of what was necessary as things were going to change for her and evolve for her. She obviously attended to her daughter by being available to her, but yet working at home, and then realized that as her daughter was leaving, she now needed to put more focus onto herself. But you know, Jody, there are many women who, let's say, are divorced and who are financially taken care of by their ex-spouses, and who may say, well, you know, financially I'm taken care of and I don't need to work, and so then can just totally focus on their children. And then what happens once the children grow and move out? What do they do? So the example you gave is really a wonderful example of the way somebody who's single should function and now say, okay, I've got to shift my balance to me. Mm-hmm. I have to first be available to my child as they're growing up, but now as my child is ready to spread their wings, I have to now focus more on me. But there are situations where, and it's not always moms that are the ones that are home, but, you know, I think for the majority of the time, it is the moms that are home. If the mom has not paid any attention to herself, it's a terrible burden on the child. And then once the child leaves, you know, who is she? How does she identify who she is? And, you know, it's hard for her to then make a life on her own.
Yeah.
So,
particularly
so she's really at risk.
Yes. And particularly if that doesn't happen until later in the child's development, or, you know, even into the teen years isn't necessarily too late, but it is later.
Right.
Or certainly waiting until the child's gone and then going, wow, now what do I do? And first looking at it then.
Right. Now, I must also say that a lot of these women may have, according to the research, been prone for depression anyway. And then what happens is that by the children leaving, it's the like the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's the triggering event, and so it brings on the depression, and that's what makes it particularly difficult. So it's as if it was just sort of lying dormant, and then the actual event is what actually sets it into motion.
That's a good point, because some of the other things that you mentioned also, such as marriages that are already in trouble, but they've been staying together for the kids, and they've just kind of not been looking at it and keeping themselves busy with parenthood to just not look at that. That also sounds like it could also be kind of another time bomb, that it's just a matter of when that empty nest happens, then you're forced to look at something that maybe was there before.
Right.
Hadn't tended to.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about prevention then, and tell us, and I recall, it's interesting we had this topic today, because just Wednesday night I was at a meeting and somebody said, oh, she may be late. Her teenage son is still, and he's like a senior. Actually he's in college, but he's still living at home. And he said something like, she'll still be fixing him dinner. And yeah, I've had a talk with her about how, you know, he needs to be doing his laundry and he's capable of doing that, but he's still at home, so she's still doing all of that. And I thought, how interesting, you know, that we're going to be talking about this topic, because prevention really sounds like being willing to take a look at this early and plan for this is really the key. So what can parents do to prepare themselves for the empty nest even before their children leave?
Well, first of all, I think that piece that you're describing about this friend and the fact that her child is still living at home, and we can discuss that whole concept of when children come back perhaps a little bit later. But one of the things that you can do is to make sure that your child is capable of handling their life on their own, that they learn how to do their laundry, that they learn how to balance a checkbook, because if they're not prepared to do those things, then they're not really leaving the house. And so then it's like, okay, if you're ready to really be an empty nester, if you're really ready to start your life, And this offers a time in your life that has a lot of promise, that can offer lots of possibilities to you. If you, however, have a child who's still struggling and isn't ready to step into their own independence, then you're not really going to be able to do your thing. So prepare your child. That's the first thing. Let them be independent, okay? The next thing is to make sure that, you know, you have friends. And perhaps make connections with some friends that you haven't kept up with, or get into some situations where you're going to meet other empty nesters. You know, we generally end up being friends along the way with people who are in similar situations with us. So, you know, think in terms of making new connections again. Think in terms of where you might want to volunteer. Start to consider some classes you might want to take, or some hobbies that you've dropped in the past because you didn't have time for it and that you might want to, you know, take up again. You can think about the possibility of trips that you might want to take. And we're not necessarily talking about taking major trips, but activities that you haven't had a chance to do for yourself. So it's really a mindset where you think in terms of, this is now a time for you. And what things can you do that are going to allow you to enjoy this part of your life. And rather than seeing it as, oh, my life is over and I'm old and, you know, I'm on my way out, not really, especially because so many of us are living longer and are living healthy lives, there's no reason not to really see this as, you know, almost, I think there's a phrase that we use, like a second adulthood, where we have the opportunity to do so many things. The only thing that I would advise is not to think in terms of making big changes, because as we started our conversation, I said that this is an adjustment, and adjustment is stressful. So you don't want to do things that are major overhauls, because that's just too much. So you want to think in terms of doing things gradually and small changes.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about, because I think some of the assumptions we're making are that parents would be having their children younger, and when their children leave home, they may be 40s, 50s, maybe 60s. What about older parents who maybe don't have a child until they're 30 or 40, which would make them 50 or 60 as opposed to those younger ages? Do you find that those raise different issues when parents are so much older?
Well, first of all, you know, you said on my bio that I'm married to the same person over 30 years. I'm going to be married to him 35 years.
Oh, wonderful.
This summer, okay? And I did not get married young. So mm-hmm. that age number that you just put out there, I'm there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't consider myself by any means an older person. As a matter of fact, like when I hear the number, I'm a little over 60. When I hear the number, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Because I don't in any way, shape, or form consider myself an old person. So today's 60 truly is mm-hmm. what used to be 40 many years ago.
Yeah.
I still see myself as, you know, vital and young and capable. So even though you're right that people have married later and had children later, our entire lifespan has stretched out. And I don't know that we have to be concerned with, oh, you're older, so, you know, you're limited in any way. I truly don't believe that. I mean, I think, unfortunately, there are some people who do have health issues, but I think for the vast majority of us, we still have lots and lots of time to do many wonderful things.
And I'm glad you said that, because part of the reason why I asked that question is I just recently did a radio interview, actually in New York, Pennsylvania, there was a news anchor woman who's having her first children, and she's getting a set of twins at 49. She'll deliver mm-hmm. when she's 49. And so their question to me was, you know, oh, is that too old to be having children? And my answer was very much the same. But so that was kind of fresh in my memory as we're starting to talk about empty nest, that for younger folks who have had children, they may not have had that opportunity to pursue career goals or travel or whatever, and that's often what they'll focus on. For folks who had children later, they may have already had those career goals and vacations and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to hear you say what I was hoping you would, which is that doesn't mean that there's still nothing left to do.
Oh, absolutely.
There's still lots of things, and as long as we've been taking care of ourselves, we're in good health, that we can be doing that. So we will talk about what to do in the empty nest years. We're at 20 after, and we want to take a break. If we have folks who are listening in, we want to tell them how they can call in or get their questions in to you. So if you want to be thinking about, we'll move into our next phase of what about when you're in the empty nest years when we come back, and just take a breath and get a drink, Karen, and we're going to do a few announcements. For those of you who have just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell of the Parents Tool Shop. And today we're talking with Dr. Karen Sherman. She is a CFLE, a psychologist, relationship expert, and author of the book Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life. If you have any questions during the live show today, you can either call 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654, and then hit the 1 button on your telephone keypad to raise your hand, or you can send us a question using the chat room at www.parentstooltalk.com www.thebusinessbookshop.com. And if you would like to get access to this month's bonus resources, then sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. You'll also receive links to our featured resources, both from Parents Tool Shop and from our guest experts, information about upcoming shows, tips on downloading Parents Tool Talk recordings to your computer, subscribing to an RSS feed, and more. It's the only way to get exclusive information about future radio shows and access to the bonus resources and discounts that we offer only to our loyal listeners. So to sign up for that mailing list, just go to www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk, all one word, .com/links, L-I-N-K-S. And just know that I'll never share your private information with anyone for any reason. So let's get back to our guest expert, Karen Sherman, and our topic today on empty nesters. I know I started thinking, we'll kind of wrap up the preparation part here in terms of when do we really start preparing for the empty nest? Because I think I actually started thinking about the empty nest when my children were still young. I didn't really expect to get into parent education or for it to take off the way that it did. And so I was very happy to, actually I thought I was going to be a career working mom, I fell in love with my kids, wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And during that time it was like, well, but what about those career goals? And this was in the 80s, so the book that I read, I don't know if it's even in print now, but it was called Sequencing. And for me it was really helpful because it helped me look at my life in terms of phases and stages, and helped reassure me that I can have everything and do everything that I want to do in life. I don't have to do it all at once. And so I really kind of mapped out my career goals in relation to my children's upbringing so that when my youngest went to preschool, I started working outside the home just when she, you know, when the kids were at school. Then when they got into junior high, senior high, I started looking at different kinds of activities that I could do. And the more they were in school, and the more they were doing things in the evening, I was able to start pursuing some of those. So by the time my youngest was graduating from high school, of course it's that bittersweet, oh, the youngest is leaving the nest, but it wasn't an empty feeling in any way. I was really looking forward to, oh, now I get to be able to do some of these things that I've been waiting to do and was happy to do. It's not like, oh, I didn't get to do it because, you know, my kids got in the way. I was very, that was a choice, and I was very happy to do it. But it really gave me a sense of excitement. So I think, this would be my opinion, and I want to get your opinion, when do we really start planning for empty nest?
I'm sitting here listening saying, wow, I sure hope that book is in print.
Yeah.
What a wonderful, wonderful tool. And I wish everybody would be able to at least come up with some kind of a timeline like that, because it would be fabulous. You know, I don't know that it has to be that exact, or not that it doesn't have to be, but that everybody would be able to do that. But I think that if in, at least you could think in terms of, okay, while my children are in school, you know, I'm going to devote my time to my children, but, you know, when they start to, you know, go to junior high or high school, I'm going to start doing more things for me. I think, you know, it's more a game plan in your head as far as, again, not losing yourself. And, again, as a relationships expert, what I'm going to say is never losing your relationship.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the biggest problem, and that's why couples face their, you know, difficulty if the kids leave. That if you have put your relationship on the back burner the entire time that you're raising your children, then when they leave, you don't know how to relate to each other. So as long as you strike a balance, and by the way, let me also say that you're not doing an injustice to your children to have a relationship with your spouse. As a matter of fact, what you're really doing is teaching them a very good role model. There's nothing wrong with saying to your children as they're growing up, we're going to have mommy and daddy time now for 15 minutes. You know, we're going to put a video on for you, and we're going to have mommy and daddy time. We love you very much, but mommy and daddy need to spend special time, so we're having a babysitter come for you. Because that way you're teaching children that it's important for, you know, mommies and daddies, for people to have their own relationship. So I think that, you know, you should be doing that throughout your marriage in the same way that moms need to take time for themselves mm-hmm. throughout. You know, a lot of moms, I'm sure you know this, Jody, a lot of moms feel guilty if they take some downtime.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have that downtime because if you don't refuel yourself, you can't really be good to anybody.
Yeah. And so, also, I would say, in addition to your not putting your relationship on hold, of not putting your dreams or your career goals on hold. I know one of the fears a lot of parents have, if they can afford to be moms at home, is that they won't be able to get back into their career. And
mm-hmm.
there are ways that you can still pursue your dreams or you can still pursue your career in ways that it can be a win-win for everyone. And whether it's a single parent or a married parent, of taking time for that personal time is one of those ways that you, whether it's your personal dreams or career goals, of being able to do something for yourself really helps feel fulfilled in other areas of your life besides parenthood. So that when those empty nest years come, it's not, we didn't put all our eggs in one basket.
That's correct.
You know, we've kind of been.
And not only that. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say not only that, but today's resume is such, and people who are hiring look at you in a different way now, so that volunteering is
mm-hmm.
not poo-pooed. It's looked at where you're seen with respect, and you are assessed for what you were doing on the job. It doesn't matter whether you were being paid or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely right that by pursuing certain tasks or dreams while you're at home, or if you're volunteering or whatever it is, that doesn't mean that activity doesn't count for something.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you can put that towards something later on.
Absolutely. And give you time to even figure out what you want to do later.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, take an art course here or there. Or if you know even you the career you eventually want to go into, or the next level that you want to take your career to, of even taking a course here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things we can still do. Any other suggestions that you have around prevention, preparing ourselves for the emptiness? Anything else that maybe we've left out that you want to make sure we cover?
Well, I think that there are going to be psychologically some people who just have difficulty with separation and change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard for people to look at themselves and to be self-reflective. But if you know that is a concern or an issue that you have, you need to work on that. Because if you are doing your job as a parent, you're supposed to be preparing your children to leave and go out on their own. And when it comes time for them to go, if you're having a problem with that, it's not healthy for them. You're not going to be sending a message that's supportive and loving. So that's really an issue you have, and maybe you need to be working on that. You know, again, it may be difficult if you feel like your child is not ready to leave. And so, as you know, I said before, helping your child get ready to leave is going to help prevent some of those feelings. You know, we've already started to talk about some of the things that you can be doing just in general about your relationship. I think it's important to not hide from your feelings. As a psychologist, when people try to push away their feelings and deny them, they only come back to, you know, to kick you later on. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, not that you necessarily have to become depressed or dwell on them, but it's perfectly okay to acknowledge that you're having a variety of feelings about your children leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to be respectful of your spouse's feelings and to share that with your spouse. Perhaps your spouse is having certain feelings that you're not. Maybe you're fine with it. You know, you're excited mm-hmm. about it. You're ready to spread your own wings and do things, but your spouse is feeling a little down. Don't invalidate your spouse's feelings. Be willing to listen to them, because that's a way of connecting emotionally between the two of you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if you want to get more into the specific things that you can do at this point once you're actually in it, but at this point I was, you know, just trying to talk about overall kinds of things that you can start to do.
Yeah, and I think our point is to start now. Any time is a good time to start, and the sooner the better. Let me just, I'll make a couple of comments and hold that thought if there are some other things, and we can come back to those. First, I did want, you had said you wondered whether or not the sequencing book was in print. So let me just tell people what the name and the author are real quick on that, just in case that did pique anyone's interest. It's Sequencing, and the author's name is Arlene Rosen Cardozo. It's A-R-L-E-E-N. Rosen is R-O-S-S-E-N, and the last name is C-A-R-D-O-Z-O. It is, our producer actually went out and looked it up real quick. It is out of print, but you can get copies on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, probably used. But it really was a wonderful book, and it really truly was a life-changing book for me and really just helped me feel confident. And it's, I've just really followed it. It's guided me all these years. The other thing is we do have a comment from the chat room, and I'll just read what that comment is. It says, preparing for how to be a parent to an adult is important. Also, adult kids may move home or have other needs that involve parents, so it's important to not see this as a failure of parenting. So we appreciate that comment, and yes, we'll be talking a little bit more after our second break about when adult kids move home or visit, maybe, or have needs that still involve us. It's, I think we said a little bit earlier in the show, it's not like you're just footloose and fancy-free and you hang up your hat as a parent, mm-hmm. but it does change. And so we'll be talking a little bit more after our break on that. Let's let's talk about what the empty nest years are like. What are some things that we can do in those empty nest years? And if we need to, we can always back up if we realize there's other things we want to cover about prevention and preparing. But share with us, what is it that we want to be doing in those empty nest years?
Okay, well, again, you know, I think that just the acknowledgement of what the change is actually like can be very helpful. And there's going to be some changes that you're going to delight in, and there are going to be some changes that are going to be disheartening. So, you know, you might feel a sense of emptiness and loneliness, and you might be so delighted, you know, when you get an email because it fills a little bit of that void. But on the other hand, your grocery bills may be a lot lower. The house could stay a little bit cleaner or a lot
yeah.
cleaner. You might find that you're washing clothes a lot less. It may be a lot quieter in the house. That could be something that's positive or negative
right.
for you. Maybe you can get to the computer a lot faster. You know, so there's a lot of things. I mean, for those of you who are still really enjoying one another's intimacy, you can do so in the middle of the day without interruption, you know, without having to worry. So there's a lot that you can really start to become very tickled about. You know, on the other hand, again, as I said, it's going to be quieter in the house. It's going to be a little bit lonely in the house. It's going to be a shift and a change. And I think that you need to acknowledge that. It's important to start talking about your dreams for the future, about your expectations. And those expectations don't have to necessarily even be long-term expectations. It could even be, you know, how do you plan to spend the day? How do you plan to spend the week? Now, of course, those kinds of discussions are going to vary depending on whether one or both of you are also retired. See, that adds another
yeah.
element to this whole thing.
Good point.
Okay.
So tell us more about that.
Well, because, you know, if you've got empty nests and then soon after that you've got both people retired, that adds a whole complication. Now
mm-hmm.
both of you are sort of like around each other all the time. And so you've got that adjustment to make as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have to talk about how the two of you annoy each other. you know, do you want to be spending that much time with each other? you know, do you want to be spending, doing activities on your own? You may have to talk about financial concerns. You know, some of your finances may be better because you're not supporting the children as much. I said may.
Right.
Because in this economy, and, you know, as your the person who just wrote in, we'll talk a little bit about that whole financial issue after that break. Mm-hmm. So it may be better, it may not. And if you're retired, it may be or not. There may be health issues that are now going to become an issue for you.
Mm-hmm.
You may want to be discussing where you're going to live in the future. So, and then, you know, then we get into the whole philosophical concept of being as opposed to doing. You know, it's really a very different time of life. And I can't say this often enough. It can be the most wonderful time of life, but it depends so much on your mindset of, you know, how you approach it.
And that really ties in with what you said earlier about your willingness to do some introspection.
Yes.
And willingness to have open communication with your spouse about what it is that you want.
Right.
Because, yeah, those could kind of sneak up on you. And I like your comment, the difference between being and doing, because when most of us look at what our lives are like during the parenting years, it's very busy, especially in this day and age, the way most American families operate.
Mm-hmm.
We're all very busy, and we may take time to spend good quality time with our kids and as a family, but even beyond that, we're still doing something other than introspection, self-growth, taking quiet time for ourselves, doing those things for ourselves. A lot of times we're still very busy looking out. And I know as devoted as I was as a mom and as much as I think I did a really good job staying in balance and all that, there's a whole phase in those middle years that just went by so fast. It's like a blur when I look back. And it's because we were so busy. And my husband and I are, you know, a couple that we talk about these things and we do introspection, we do self-growth. And even we, as we were, you know, coming out on the back end and we're, you know, our youngest is in high school and getting close to there, we started talking about stuff. And it was like, gosh, we really have kind of gotten away from things more than, even though we thought we were staying on top of it, you know, had gotten away from it more than others. And we did. We realized, you know, he wanted to vacation in the mountains and I wanted to finally have time to go to a beach. And, you know, unless you can find some place that has both, you know, we had to have discussions about, well, are we going to do separate vacations? Should we be doing, you know? So it does, it raises a lot of issues. And if we're just constantly ignoring it and sticking our head in the sand, it can be a lot bigger issue to resolve when we're finally faced with it than if we can kind of be taking a look at it
as
we go
along.
You
know, communication. And again, I'm a big advocate of talking about expectations, because so much of what happens in life and one's disappointments or happiness in life is based on these preconceived notions that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And if what happens is consistent with our expectations, so you've got expectations, your spouse has expectations, and unless you talk that out, you're really talking about disaster a lot of times. But if you talk it out and come to some kind of, you know, agreement, compromise, whatever it is, then it can just flow so much more easily.
Yeah.
So what you and your husband were doing was great.
And even though I think we've probably been following all of your advice, it's still, you know, there were some surprises for us too. So I guess we're just reinforcing we want to encourage people to be planning ahead. We're actually at 40 after the hour, and we do need to take another break because we would like to tell all of you who are listening about some of the great resources that Karen has. So, Karen, you get another opportunity to take a breath, clear your throat, and take a drink of water. For those of you who maybe just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jody Johnston-Powell of the Parents Tool Shop, and today we're talking with Dr. Karen Sherman on the subject of empty nesters. If you do have any questions during the live show, you can either call in at area code 347-205-9654. I'll say that again, 347-205-9654, and then hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand. Or you can send us a question using the chat room at parentstooltalk.com and just look for the chat play button near the player that's on that page. And while I check our switchboard for callers, I'm actually going to pass over to my producer, Chris Gooley, who is going to give you some important information about our featured resources this month. Right, Chris?
Sure, Jody.
Great.
We have several resources being offered by today's guest, Dr. Karen Sherman, so let's talk about them. First off, we have a free mini course that's delivered by email on the 5 top tips for having a great relationship. This is available through Karen's website, and all it takes is a name and an email address to sign up for the course. And in just 10 lessons, you'll learn practical tools and simple but effective exercises that take only minutes to do and are proven to revitalize relationships in all areas. And when you sign up for this mini course, you will also receive Karen's monthly newsletter, which offers tips on choice living, which you can keep receiving or, of course, choose to cancel at any time. We also want to tell listeners about Karen's free 3-week email program entitled Choice Relationships. Now, this course is designed to help individuals and couples get their relationships back on track. And we're using the word individuals as well as couples here because all it takes is one person to start acting in step with what you learn from choice relationships, and the other person is likely to react in kind. Also, Karen would like all of our listeners to check out her book, Marriage Magic, Find It, Keep It, and Make It Last. Now, Karen, feel free to jump in here if you would like I'm reading some words from your website. If you'd like to jump in here with anything else.
The only other thing I want to say, Chris, is I'd love them to take a look at my book, which is coming out in second edition in about a week, called Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life. It helps people learn the tools to help them get past their past and live a life of choice.
Okay, great. Fantastic. We do have a couple of things about the Marriage Magic book I wanted to mention. The website does a real good job of explaining why this book is different from other relationship books because, number one, it understands and provides examples of problems from both the male and female perspective. Number two, you don't need to read the whole book to benefit. You can pick and choose which parts of the book are relevant to you. Number three, like the Choice Relationships course we talked about earlier, the suggestions offered in the book can help relationships even if only one person reads it. And number four, there is dialogue and exercises in each chapter to help you deal with emotions and improve communication. And whether you would like to buy a copy of Karen's book, Marriage Magic, or check out the new edition of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, or check out her free email courses, we have placed links to all of these resources, just like always, on our website at www.parentstooltalk.com/links, and that's www.parentstooltalk.com/links. And on that page, you'll also find a link to Jody's free featured article this month entitled Prepare Teens to Leave the Nest. So one last time, that web address is parentstooltalk.com. That slipped in there that time. /links. And now I'll hand things back over to you, Jody.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And let us know when you get back to the chat room whether or not anybody has a question over there. Otherwise, let's move into talking about some of the challenges of the empty nest years. And we've made several references to it, so let's finally get to it. And that's talking a little bit about children going off to college on their own and then coming back to visit. Now, I'm not so much talking about coming back to live at home because our listeners can go to our radio show archives and listen to the show we did on adult children because we really explored that topic very well. But when adult children visit, there are special challenges the parents face. So tell us what those are and what parents can do to help those visits go a bit more smoothly.
Well, I think that when they have gone away to college, they're accustomed to freedom. They're accustomed to not being asked, where are you going? What time are you coming home? And they come back to be with their parents on Christmas break or summer break, and they're not expecting those questions to be asked anymore. Now, on the other hand, the parents feel like, well, now that you're back in the house, you know, what's the big deal if I just say, where are you going and when are you going to be home? And so that creates a problem. So that's where, you know, the issue really is. And so it's almost like you have to start a new dance that has to be choreographed. And I think it's really just a matter of having a sense of humor about it or having a little talk. And what the way that I always dealt with it with my kids is just to say, look, you know, I know you're in college now, and I know that I'm being a pain in the neck, but when you're in my house, I can't help but worry. And I don't expect you to give me all the details, but just, you know, out of respect, sort of tell me this. And I had to then just, you know, watch the amount of questions that I asked and not make them as annoying as I might have done when they were back in high school. And the other thing is that, again, I always feel it's more the parents' obligation. I had to sort of pull back a little bit and understand that these were now adult kids who were, you know, accustomed to being on their own, and allow them, you know, to be free. But I had good kids, so I guess I didn't have to worry that much. You do, however, it's your house. I think that parents have the right to expect a certain amount of respect. And if it really crosses too many boundaries, that you can, you know, have to have a talk with them.
Yeah, and I see that whole issue of telling people where you're going to be and when you're going to be home. That's not just something that we do with our kids. I find a lot of spouses will check, and it's one of those, well, if I know when to expect you, then I may know if something may be going wrong, or
exactly.
So it's safety as well as respect, and it's not so much a prying thing as much as it is
accountability.
Accountability, yeah. And caring about each other. And in terms of I just lost my train of thought. children coming home to visit, that it's not so much the details of where they're going to be and that you're really prying about that. It's really just being able to let each other know. Oh, I know I was going to say, if they're coming home to visit, they may be staying out till 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, when they're on campus or whatever, but when they come home at those hours, we may not be staying up, but it may wake us up. Or if you live in a house like mine, I've got two doggy doorbells. And, you know, if someone's going to come home late at night, they can try to come in quiet, but it's probably not going to work. So it still has to work for everyone when they come home. It's not going to be exactly like it was before. And so people don't just kind of slip right back in, but it's also not going to be just like it is at campus either. So you do. It's kind of like a new conversation that we need to have about,
right,
you know, how is that going to work for us now, and can we just establish some basic ground rules? And I don't have to know all the details, but let's talk about how this might work so that having you home it's going to work for all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as you said, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. My husband and I tell each other, you know, I'm going out now, expect me back in an hour or so. It's just a matter of being accountable to the people that you're staying with, or, you know, even if you were visiting somebody,
right.
You would do the same. So, you know, I think that when kids go off to college, they're thinking in terms of, well, I'm an adult now, you know, and, you know, I don't want to be told, you know, where I'm going or what I have to do. And so they've got that mindset, and they have to be told that it's not about, as you said, prying. It's just a matter about just being mindful of one another.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's certainly a challenge. You know, and the person who wrote in was asking about finances, and that's a hard one also, because, again, most young adults who are going off to school are not going to be financially able to hold their own. You're still paying bills for them. But on the other hand, if they're on their own and they're expecting independence, you would like them to be responsible, and at the very least be responsible in the manner in which they handle their monies. You know, I have a neighbor across the street whose son went to college recently, and all she asked him was, when it gets down to $100, please let me know so that we're not overdrafting. And he didn't do that. And that's all she asked. She said, we'll keep supplying the money. Just let me know when it gets down to a certain number so that we don't start bouncing checks. And he didn't do that. So that was not being responsible. So, you know, there are lots of different little nuances where you're in this transition
right.
of moving from a full-fledged dependent person to this independent person.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, there have to be conversations about how those issues are going to be handled.
Yeah, and it is a transition and in flux. I know both of our children are still in college, and they are out on their own, and they are paying for some of their bills, their rent, their utilities, their
mm-hmm.
and they're paying for their own car insurance. But we've always said, as long as you're in school, we're still willing to help out. So if there's
mm-hmm.
a particularly medical bills, if they're running short on groceries till the next paycheck, we're happy to help out a little bit with some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, one last question. I think we're getting close here. We've got maybe just 2, maybe 3 minutes. But I wanted to ask a bit, because a lot of parents today are in what's known as the sandwich generation, where
mm-hmm.
they're taking care of children and aging parents.
Yes.
So even though they may have an empty nest, they're not really kind of the footloose and fancy free, totally free. They're still caring for someone, but it may be their adult parents.
Yes.
Any suggestions that you may have to offer these parents?
Well, just that these are tough times. You know, before I was saying, isn't it wonderful that empty nesters still have many, many years where they're vital and they can do all these wonderful things. However, the flip side of that is their parents are living longer also.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, many of them have lots and lots of health issues and are not capable of taking care of themselves. And so empty nesters, as you said, very often find themselves not only caring for their adult children, but for their elderly parents. And obviously, it is much more helpful if you have siblings and siblings who are on good terms with each other. And so, you know, you can hopefully help one another. I think that if you have the ability to get outside help that you feel you can trust, that will be useful to you, because it's very difficult to keep putting strains on yourself. And you've come to a point in your life where you are entitled to finally take care of yourself
mm-hmm.
And not feel guilty that you're just always responsible to someone. But it's very difficult. It's a very difficult time. And I think, again, from the psychological point of view, it's okay for you to have a number of different feelings, including resentment, and that if you allow yourself to have those feelings, then you can continue doing what you need to do. So it's a multifaceted problem, but again, using as much support systems and resources as you can will make it a lot easier.
Yeah, and again, the same things that we said about when your children are still at home, of making sure you do take time for yourself. And I have seen friends who don't have siblings around and are taking care of their elderly parents, and I've just seen the emotional and physical, I mean, effects
mm-hmm.
of the stress.
Yes.
And they're just really doing whatever they can. They don't have to do it all. And fortunately, I think we've got more supportive services in this day and age that parents can rely on, and not necessarily do full time, but to give them that respite and to give them
mm-hmm.
that break, because they won't be around much longer if they are having health issues. And so, yeah, we want
right.
to be able to enjoy them while we can.
That's
so.
Right.
We're getting down to the end here. We have about just 5 more minutes left or so. What I'm going to have you do, Karen, I'm going to give kind of a recap and some final reminders about some of our resources. I want you to think if there's any points, you know, if there was maybe a question that I didn't ask that you think would be really important for people to know about, think about some final comments, and I'll give you some time before we actually sign off today to give your final comments for that. So let me give a recap. Our guest today has been Dr. Karen Sherman, and we have been talking about empty nesters. And I just appreciate all the insights and practical advice that you've given us, Karen. It's really been so enlightening and so helpful. Foster parents, remember to check out from the call for your continuing education hours by either sending a chat message or staying on the line until you hear a recording that the show has stopped recording. Then send your reminder email to questions@parentstooltalk.com for verification of your attendance. Now, folks, remember you can find the links to all this month's resources by going to www.parentstooltalk.com/links. And if you're not already on the Parents Tool Talk mailing list, you can do that as well while you're there. That web address, again, is www.parentstooltalk.com/links. You can subscribe to the Parents Tool Talk audio through iTunes by going to parentstooltalk.com/links and clicking on the subscribe link. Or if you go to the iTunes store and you type in Parents Tool Talk in the search window, you can find our shows there, as well as all of our archives are on the Parents Tool Talk radio homepage. Last but not least, please remember to check out Karen's website. She does have two. One is www.drkarensherman.com, and that's drkarensherman.com. And you can go there directly, or you can go to parentstoolshop.com/links, and you'll find the links there as well. So, Karen, thank you for joining us today. We actually have maybe a minute or so if you would like to offer any final comments, and you can just continue to talk until you hear our exit music play, and I'll take over from there.
Okay. Well, first of all, Jody, I want to thank you so much for having me. And I think that this is an important topic. And I just want people to know that, you know, there's just this negative vibe around the whole concept of empty nesters, and that absolutely it doesn't have to be that way. I think that with a proper attitude and with a good balance and the concept of sort of shifting the balance from children to yourselves and making sure that you also keep your relationship going, that these are wonderfully vital years, and that there's no reason to think that you are going to have problems, presuming that you're in a marriage, that your marriage is going to suffer and that there's going to be burnout or that you're going to be unhappy. This can be the next phase of your life that can offer tremendously wonderful possibilities. It's just really a matter of having expectations set properly, communicating, not thinking in terms of that you're being selfish, but planning a little bit for yourself, and seeing it as a part of the lifespan.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Karen, for those final comments and for joining us today. And thanks to everyone listening for joining us today on Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm Jody Johnston-Powell, and you can learn more about Parents Tool Shop at parentstoolshop.com. I hope you'll join us again next month when our topic will be Teaching Values to Children and Parents with our special guest, Harriet Heath. Also, a reminder that on February the 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I'll do a live open Q&A call. Until then, wish you all a great weekend and a great month to follow. Take care. See you next time.